Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Feeling Seen, the podcast that talks about the movies that make us feel seen. It's a landmark day here on the Feeling Seen podcast. One of my favorite podcasters, really, at this point. You know his work, I would imagine. You know The Bridesmaids. You know, as Sandra Bullock would say, the fucking heat. You know, one of the most joke dense, unbelievably funny comedies of the 21st century, Spy. There's just so much. You know, Freaks and Geeks. You know, A Simple Favor. Yes. If you know me and you know nothing else, my co-host today, the writer, the director, the producer, now the back to being the prolific maker of television, Paul Feig. How are you today, and what else do the people need to know?
I don't know. I feel like a lot of people are going like, oh, no, not him again. I show up on your shows a lot, Jordan, because I love you.
If that's their reaction, they can unsubscribe.
Screw them. Yeah, that's right. No, I mean, the School for Good and Evil, I've been working on that for 2.5 years.
Oh my God.
Comes out October 19th on Netflix. I'm really proud of it. And then Welcome to Flatch, one of the shows I produce and direct on, is on Fox at 9 o'clock on Thursdays.
Second season,
super funny. And
so are you overlapping press tours right now, or are you doing all School for Good and Evil as you're trotting around the world?
Yeah, it's all School for Good and Evil. It's like a second season of a show you don't usually do much press for. Sadly, okay. I would love to, but watch it. It's a funny show and we need the ratings. They're on Hulu too. You can watch us on Hulu, but watch it on the network, because that means the ratings they care about.
What is the School for Good and Evil about? So we have that on the record for the people.
Yeah, I mean, it's based on a series of young adult books, but it's about these two young women who live in a small town somewhere in another part of time or whatever, and it's a very backwards town. One is a girl who really wants to be a princess, and the other is the daughter of a witch. And the princess finds out about the School for Evil, where they train heroes and villains for fairy tales. And she applies to it, and they get swept away to the place. But then she gets dropped into the School for Evil, and the witch gets dropped into the School for Good. And then it's all about figuring out a meditation on who's good, who's evil. What are we? Are we all of it? Are we nothing? And then a lot of fun and big effects during the ride, if you will.
This is a fantasy film, which I feel like this, let's have that plant the seed for our conversation here today about the character in the movie that you have chosen for us to discuss today.
Yes.
Who are we discussing today, Paul?
We are going to talk about Richard Dreyfuss's character of Roy in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the Steven Spielberg classic.
Let's go.
I've been rewatching it, and I got like the whatever anniversary, like UHD edition was whatever I ended up renting. And God, this movie still looks incredible.
It's so well shot. I love, I'm a Raiders, made me want to become a director, but this I think is his best directed, because it looks so real, know? He really, everything down from when they have to stage that whole gas attack and everybody's running, it's got this energy to it, and it's just beautiful, and it's so affecting. But his character, the irony about this movie is, it's funny I became a movie director, because when I saw this is back in, was it 76 or something like that? So I was, a freshman or even younger than that, I think. And I used to watch movies as if they were kind of real life. You know what I mean? So, like the Marx Brothers movie, I want to be Groucho Marx because he's so funny. Yeah. I want to be I didn't think like, oh, people make these.
Right.
And so Close Encounters was almost like a documentary to me.
Wow.
And I came out of that just going, I want to be picked up by aliens and taken away from all my bullies and all the shit that I have to go through in my small town of Michigan at the time.
Well, actually, Ty West kind of like, I just had him on a recent episode, and he said something similar where like he loved movies, but it was the movie we talked about was Peter Jackson's Bad Taste. And was the first time he ever watched a movie where he really felt like, oh, someone made this.
Yeah.
People make the I could make this. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, it would be, they were these like spectacles of fantasy, you know, come to life. And then suddenly it felt tangible and it felt real to him.
Yeah. And for me, that was Raiders of the Lost Ark. Mm. You know, I was a tour guide at Universal Studios in the summer of 81. And a bunch of tour guides were like, hey, we're going to go see opening morning of this new movie, Spielberg movie. You know, I honestly didn't really even know who Steven Spielberg was. I'd heard his name, but I didn't know what directors did.
Yeah.
You know, but then I went and watched this movie, and that's the first time I watched this audience go crazy. I mean, you know, that scene where the boulder comes rolling down after him in the beginning. Now, it's part of history, and we just go, oh, yeah, it's that thing. But nobody had ever seen that before. Uh-huh, so literally, when that happened, the entire audience at the Man Chinese stood up, and they were cheering and screaming. And it was just like, oh, shit, this is what a director can do. And that was the moment, like, it all switched to my head of like, ooh, I want to do that.
So how old were you when you saw Close Encounters? Is this a theater movie for you, or was this later on? Okay. Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were such sci-fi nerds that we would just go, my friend Mike and I, my next door neighbor, who was my babysitter and my best friend.
my babysitter that I and my sister grew up with, that second family, we go there for Christmas, we go there for Thanksgiving. I support babysitters as best friends.
Exactly. I mean, he was probably, you know, he was like 3 years older than me. Yeah. But yeah, so we would, every time there'd be a new sci-fi movie, we would rush out and see it opening day or opening morning. And so, yeah, we saw that in the theater. I forget, it came out in 76 or
1977.
So I was a sophomore in high school, so I was 15, I guess, and just blew my mind.
Yeah, this is the story of a small town man. Well, it's the story of many people, but Roy Neary is a small town man, played by Richard Dreyfuss. He has a family. Every time I watch a movie and I get to see Terry Garr on screen again, I get so happy. I love Terry Garr.
Yes,
she plays his put upon wife, and he has three children. And it's an interwoven story. There's a government cover up. There's military operations here. But Roy is kind of our human face, Roy and Jillian.
Yeah.
And they are two people who have close encounters that enters the story very early on into the movie. And then they are overwhelmed with a vision of a mountaintop that turns out to be a location in Wyoming that they, like a pilgrimage, must go to, and they sort of forsake all other concerns in their life to get there, with the added detail for Jillian that her son has been kidnapped by aliens, so obviously she's a little single-mindedly obsessed to go find them, but Roy is just, like, compelled from within his soul to go to these aliens.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's a real Peter Pan story. It's a very Arrested Development male story, so let's get that out of the way right now. I mean, you've got Terry Garr is the wife.
Warms my heart so much.
Roy, look, don't talk about this until you know what you're talking about, okay?
Honey, that's crazy. If I can't talk about it, then how am I going to know what's going on?
What?
Mom, I believe in him.
I believe in him too.
Oh, no, you don't.
That's just for you.
No, he does not. Do you, Roy?
Ronnie, all I want to do is know what's going on.
But nothing's going on. It's just one of those things.
Which things?
Oh, she's the best. And, you know, I worked with her. Actually, I did a Christmas movie called Unaccompanied Minors, and she was in it. And so I actually got to work with Terry Garr finally and tell her of my undying love for her. Completely weirded her out, I'm sure. Meet my wife. She looks like you. Like, let me out of here.
So you go to see these sites. We talked about this recently on the Disaster Podcast when you were there for... Oh, gosh, what is the title of the amazing movie, the 1950 movie that you just brought
up? Oh, When Worlds Collide.
When Worlds Collide. Yes. And you talked about, like, you know, just this was the ritual, was to go to see all these kinds of movies in theaters.
Yeah.
So what was it about Roy and Richard Dreyfuss's performance that really jumped out to you amidst all of these movies that you would go see? Why was it this one that you were like, this has got something extra?
Well, it was a circumstance, first of all, because, you know, I was a bullied kid, and you know, I had good friends and everything and great parents, so it wasn't like I, you know, was dying or whatever, but at the same time, it was just like, oh, like, get me out of this place, you know. Small town Michigan at that time was, everything was judgmental and all this stuff. So, and I was really just into the idea of UFOs and astronomy and space and all that stuff. So when I saw it, it was a combo. First of all, just the idea. First, it's just so well made that you're just immediately like thrilled. That first scene, well, that's one of the greatest openings of a movie ever. And it's nothing other than people in a room watching a screen. But there's these flight controllers, air traffic controllers, and they're talking to us, and they hear a plane almost get hit by a UFO, and it's done so well, and it's shot so well, and that one you're just like. You're in this
watching,
movie.
Like, there's just like suddenly there's more people around, and there's more people around, and this steadily gathering crowd of like, what's going on over there?
Yeah. And just watching these two numbers on this very old, computer readout, like almost hit.
Ultra bright and really moving. And right by us, right now. Now, that was really close. Series 31 is out of 340 on the traffic pass.
Ask them if they want to report officially.
UWA 517, do you want to report a UFO over?
And then you hear this audio of the guy, this kind of crackling sounds. It's like, do you want to report it? No, I don't want to report that. I don't know what I just saw. So that, and then you immediately go and meet Roy, who works for the power company. He's like a power lineman or whatever. And he's driving at night and has this close encounter in his truck. But it's all from his point of view. So what's great about that movie is you're always with him, and he's in this truck and this thing comes over and it shines a light on him. And then suddenly the truck's like moving around. Everything in the truck is flying around, but he gets kind of zapped. And I think that's where he gets implanted with this idea where the aliens kind of plant it. Basically, he's the chosen one.
Right, right.
And by the aliens to come with them, which so that I'm just like, oh, my God, I love that. Also, he was, again, a very Arrested Development kind of guy. So I related to that as a kid because I was too nervous to talk to girls or anything like that.
So, I mean, that's the character, this adult man with three children and you as like a 13-year-old being like, I get that guy.
Yeah. Oh, no, totally. His wife, he's just another kid in the house. Like she calls him Jiminy Cricket. That's her like nickname for him.
Yep. Yep.
And then just the fact that he's been chosen for this and becomes obsessed with it is just, I love that because he was so special because he'd been picked by another world.
Yeah.
We're the only ones who know. The only ones.
I'm into science and stuff, and it was always, everybody's like, there's no UFOs. Like all the science people, like there's no UFOs. There's no other civilizations. It's a miracle that we exist. And I'm like, that's impossible. It can't.
It's impossible.
The universe is infinite. You're telling me that's the only time it added up is here. So, so this is just supporting everything I always thought, which is, they're out there and all that. And then just him getting obsessed.
This means something.
But now here's the thing. Did you watch like the special edition? It's called.
I don't think I did.
Okay. Well, what happened was, and this I've always found this kind of a bummer. The original movie that came out had this great scene. And tell me if it was in the one you saw where he becomes obsessed with with that mountain, and he starts going around his neighborhood, pulling up neighbors like. Plants
no,
and trees.
I didn't see that. I think I probably saw what came right after, which is him in his living room holding holding a tree, small tree, and like putting leaves on the side of the mountain in his living room.
So backstory on this, which is he made the movie. He wanted to have a sequence at the end where you go inside the spaceship. The studio didn't want to pay for it and wouldn't let him do it. So he always stewed over that. So then when the movie came out, it was a giant hit. He said, now I want to go back and shoot the special edition and we'll go inside the spaceship. But clearly what happened was they made him horse trade because it made the movie too long.
Oh.
And so the scene got taken out. And it's always bugged me because it's the greatest scene. It's so funny. It's just him going around the neighborhood, like grabbing chicken wire and the neighbors, ducks all run away and he's pulling everybody's stuff and throwing it through the windows and just a man obsessed who built a giant mountain in his living room.
What are you doing?
You're gonna love it, Ronnie!
What do you mean?
You really love this!
Ronnie, what are you doing? Oh! Oh, God!
Come on in!
Dad,
But it builds to it. Now in that special edition, it's just suddenly it's there and you're like, what the fuck? You know?
Yeah, there's just, we suddenly pull back and there is the mountain in his living room.
Yeah, so it kind of loses that punch that I loved, because I go like, oh my God, this is a guy who's so obsessed, mm-hmm. you know, and so he has a purpose. You know, he felt very important to me, you know, uh-huh. it, kind of a kid who was trying to figure out his place in the world and was bullied and all that. You go like, wow, if you had that singularity of purpose because you have been chosen to be that important that you could right. actually be antisocial and just tear everything up in the cause of good, you know, supposedly.
Supposedly.
Yeah. So that guy, I was just kind of like, that's amazing. So I think I really just responded to that. But, you know, again, I mean, the movie is just so well made. The sound design and the light. I never seen lighting like that before.
The lighting. God, even when in the scene when Jillian's little boy gets taken and just like the lighting and the sound all around and through the house, the oranges and the blues, it is so rich and gorgeous.
Oh, there's that shot. They're in the like the living room or whatever, and the lights going up outside of the blinds and they're like huddling. And it's one of the most compelling, like visceral shots I've ever seen. And I just like, I would just like choke up and like get teary eyed watching that. Cause it's overwhelming. I get overwhelmed in movies. I don't get sad because of emotion. Uh-huh. I get overwhelmed by like something so wonderful, or the music and the imagery come together so much that I just like, I can't breathe. And that's like one of those sequences. Every time I watch it, I'm just a disaster.
It's just so gorgeous.
Ultimate movie moments. I mean, those are the things as a director, we're always like, when can that happen? Like I got one sequence in my new movie that I have that too. I'm just like, I get so like happy and emotional watching it, because it, you know, came together in that way. So yeah, so you know, all about those moments that are what really connect you.
Now, so this is like the biggest sci-fi fantasy thing that you've done, School for Good and Evil. You you grew up going to these movies constantly.
Yeah.
What, so has it been sort of like, has working in that thing that sort of raised you a little bit in the movie house, has getting into that kind of genre and that sandbox been kind of like a long game? Like, I'm going to get to a point where I'm going to be able to use the tips and tricks I learned from the Close Encounters kind of in the Raiders kinds of movies.
Yeah. I mean, that's all I've ever wanted to do were kind of bigger movies. But not so much fantasy. It was always wanted to be sci-fi. I wanted to do big sci-fi. Like my biggest regret in life is that I didn't invent Star Wars, you know. I'm like, oh, why couldn't that have been me? You know, I don't want all the fan blowback now that George Lucas gets, although I think I know what that's like after doing a movie called Ghostbusters. But but
I still stand by.
Yeah, no, thank you. But, you know, but it's that I don't know. There's something about creating a big franchise that people care about so much that it just I just love the idea that, and the big movies, because I like big, you know, you and I, we're maximalists, you know,
we absolutely are.
Yeah. And so, you know, my other, you know, I feel like all my movies are kind of maximalist, but spectacle, like emotional spectacles, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything's just like all these, the emotional stakes are high. So that's kind of how I scratch that itch. But when I get to do it with, you know, with design and creatures and building all this stuff and then special effects, you know, like my goal has always been, I want to do practical special effects. That's all. Yeah. I kind of
miniatures. We've talked about miniatures.
We talked all about this. Exactly. I know. So, you know, but I think that's why Star Wars blew my mind. And that's why Close Encounters blew my mind. I mean, the first time you see that mothership, which, you know, now it's a famous shot once again, but
right.
My head exploded when they came out, because I'd never seen something that big, like portrayed that big. I mean, that thing comes, it's the entire horizon. This thing comes up and they build to it so beautifully. You know, it's kind of all the little ones are going, you know, the little spaceships that are all lit up are kind of dancing around the sky, and you think that's over, you know, everybody like applauds and the, you know, the, that secret mountaintop or whatever. And then all of a sudden you hear that big, and this thing just, that rumbling, and like where I think there's a shot of Richard Dreyfuss, like, or no, it's Melinda, you know, Melinda Dillon.
Yeah.
She's kind of leaning up in these rocks, and all of a sudden you see just behind her this kind of, you know, light come up in this piece of a giant thing.
My God.
And then they reveal this enormous mothership. And, you know, that blew my mind. And then when I, you know, with all my Starlog magazines and all that stuff, read, and they would see them building the model, you know, mm-hmm. and how they would pirate all these. They get, you know, model airplanes from World War II, and they just take all the pieces and glue them all over this thing. And, you know, it just made it feel real to me, mm-hmm. because it actually existed somewhere, this thing.
It's still, I'm a sucker for, give me any opening shot with a spaceship flying in from the top of the screen.
Exactly.
And overtaking the whole, like that, every time I will be like, oh, see?
Yeah.
Like that will get me no matter what, because it just like, you feel the scope of it so much.
Yeah.
And like, that is still what can get me about like Star Wars stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember like my favorite shot from, I think it was the Force Awakens, was just a wide shot on, I think it's Jakku, whatever the planet is that Rey lives on, and it's just an Imperial cruiser crashed into the background.
That's
and it's
awesome.
Like, that's real.
That's
they went to
so
a place
cool.
where there's an Imperial cruiser grounded in the desert, and that's why they filmed there, because that's where that is.
Right, exactly.
Do you find that, like, what is it that you, with how, like, obviously proliferate and incredible visual effects have become, like, at a massive scale, what do you find still takes your breath away as a moviegoer, as somebody who was raised as it was happening for the first time, experiencing for the first time the Close Encounters mothership coming into the frame? Where do you look to for that now? Or is it still those older movies and revisiting them that gives that feeling?
I mean, not to sound like an old guy, I think it is kind of those older movies, because now I know everything is CG. It's not as fun for me to watch that stuff, because I kind of goes like a video game. You know, that's why with this movie, the movie I just finished, I tried to do as much practical stuff as I could, because, you know, I'm an old guy. I was at opening opening weekend of Star Wars, you know, and a friend of mine went to the very first show. He somehow, because I was in school or had a test, I couldn't go. And he bought like this program they were selling at the thing. So it just had all these stills from the movie. And I was just like, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. Mm-hmm. And so then when I was sitting there with my mom took me because I, you know, was 13 or whatever.
Yeah.
And, I'm just sitting in my seat like my heart was pounding and I was numb. The lights went down, you know, and then that, you know, in a galaxy far, far away, that thing comes up in silence and you're just like, what? And then that, you know, that, you know, the score and just the Star Wars thing goes away from you into space. And then that thing, it's just like, I mean, I was just like transported and like couldn't breathe. I'd been watching all the movies like When Worlds Collide and all these things, old Flash Gordon reruns and stuff, which are all just goofy and, you know, but cool. I thought that was cool. So then to see something go like, that's a model, but it's real. How does that work? So I haven't honestly gotten that kind of juice from effects in movies. I'm trying to think what's kind of blown me away. I honestly think more things like Everything Everywhere All at Once, like the bagel. I was kind of like, because how it hits has to be something you've never seen before.
Yeah.
They're doing it on a computer, but you're like, oh my God, that's an image I never would have even come up with.
My brain would never have computed that to make it anything or even imagine it.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And honestly, I think I get more amazed now by like insane stunts, you know, like.
I think that's a really great point. I was thinking that while you were talking, I was like, you know what? Like, I feel like the thing that presses that button for me now is like action spectacle.
Yeah.
Like just the physical, where like when you can't substitute it for like a CGI situation or it's people on wires maybe, but like incredible fight choreography. People really putting,
oh my God,
anything Michelle Yeoh does.
Yeah.
People really putting their bodies on the line to demonstrate to you that the thing you will be most in awe of that is in front of you right now.
Yeah.
Is the thing that the human will be doing against whatever extravagant generated world exists around and behind them. But it's like, but wow, look what she can do.
Oh, totally. I mean, you know, Jackie Chan's Drunken Master 2. I can't believe that. I mean, this is a fight under a train with these long like spears. And then there's a fight in this restaurant that's the greatest thing ever, when he's always in a panic. you know, because trying not to get killed. So that's what makes it so funny. He's not like a cool guy. He's actually like this normal guy who's just happened to have these really great abilities to save himself.
Yeah.
You know, but then, you know, on the stunt thing also, it's like one of the Nolan, I forget which Nolan Batman it was, but where like that bus is going and it blows up so that it like the back end flips up. So like
I think that's Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah. You flip a bus from the back lengthwise. And I was like, holy shit. And then I found out they really did that. So I'm like, okay, I'm amazed by that. Like, you can get all the creatures you want, but like, blow a bus up that way, and I am a puddle.
It is time for a quick break, but when I come back, we'll hear Paul's harrowing tale of the first time he saw Alien. Not an alien, unfortunately for Paul, but the Ridley Scott movie, Alien. Then I will have one quick thing before I go about, ta-da, the 1 year anniversary of this very podcast. So stick around to the end.
Hi, I'm Jackie Cation.
Hello, I'm Lori Kilmerton.
We do a podcast called The Jackie and Lori Show, and you could listen to it anytime you want it because there's hundreds of episodes.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing comedy forever, and we should both quit. So why don't you listen up before we leave this not only terrible business, but this awful world.
And find out why we can't. Because we love it so.
Jackie and Lori Show. Every week here on MaximumFun.org.
Hi, it's Jesse Thorne, the founder of Maximum Fun. I am breaking into this programming to say thank you to Max Fun's members. Your purchases in this year's post-Max Fun Drive patch sale raised over $50,000 for Trans Lifeline. Maybe you already know about the good work that Trans Lifeline does. If you don't, they're a trans-run organization that offers direct emotional and financial support to trans people in crisis. If you want to learn more about the work Trans Lifeline does or support them further, go to translifeline.org. Thanks for supporting Maximum Fun. Thanks for supporting Trans Lifeline. And thanks for being awesome people who want to do good in the world.
Welcome back to Feeling Seen. I'm talking with Paul Feig, the filmmaker who brought us Bridesmaids, Freaks and Geeks, a personal favorite, A Simple Favor, and most recently the show Welcome to Flatch on Fox, along with the movie The School for Good and Evil on Netflix. The man stays busy, so let's jump back into that conversation.
You'll be very proud of me, Jordan. I've been watching a lot of horror lately.
Yes.
Yep. I watched like Hellraiser for the first time the other night.
Like Clive Barker's Hellraiser?
Yes, which is a banana.
I was going to say, tell me your immediate impressions of Hellraiser coming into that one.
It's crazy, first of all. I mean, what I find funny is movies that say, we're just not going to have any sense of humor whatsoever. Like, we're going to take this so seriously and not put one joke in here, a moment of lightness.
And Julia, Claire Higgins, Julia, yeah, playing that totally fucking straight. And just like, she is giving an erotic thriller, heroine performance, femme fatale performance in the middle of like a BDSM erotica body horror movie.
I know. I didn't think it was going to be so like such a sexual tale. I'm just like,
so lurid.
It's hilarious. With
you, if you liked that movie, Hellraiser 2 Hellbound is actually my favorite.
That's the one I'm going to watch next. I've always heard that's the best.
Yeah. It's real because like I love the first but it's more Claire, it's good, more Julia Higgins, good, and we're hellbound, so we're going to the place, and it's just like it kind of like it takes the perfect springboard of one and is like, and here's what you've been all waiting for. And Ashley Lawrence is phenomenal, and obviously like, oh, the Cenobites. That's what I will say about the new Hellraiser, is that the Cenobites look as outstanding today as they did in the 80s. So yeah, oh my god, I am so glad you finally got into Clive Barker's
Hellraiser. It's all because of you. You made me feel like I gotta start watching horror. And now here, the funny thing is, because I was so afraid of horror my entire life, that now when I watch them, I had blown them all up. They're going to be so terrifying that everything I watch, I'm like, oh, cool. But that's not half as scary as I thought it was going to be, because I literally would amp myself up to think I would like die. Right. It would be so scary. I would die.
Well, like you said, you get so overwhelmed. And if you combine that overwhelm with fear, maybe your heart will just up and stop.
Well, the only time I think I almost did die in a movie was when in high school. First of all, the lead up to this is a horrifying story, but I will tell it to you anyway. It was my junior year, and there's a girl in my class who I really liked, and I decided to ask her to the Christmas dance, I think it was, and so it might have been prom, something like that, a big dance. And so asked her, and then on the Monday before, my next door neighbor Mike goes, there's a movie called Alien opening up on Friday. We gotta go to the opening, you know, night thing. I was just like, but I'm taking Beth to the dance. And he's like, I don't know, man, this is supposed to be great. And I was like, What do I do?
This feels like something you would write specifically into one of your movies. Yeah. This sounds like a Paul Feig movie setup.
Yes, this is a Freaks and Geeks season 2 story, I think. So I, being the sci-fi nerd that I was, go to school the next day and make this whole, oh my God, this is so terrible. Go like, oh, Beth, I'm so upset. My parents, I have an aunt who's sick. They're making us go and visit her in Ohio. I can't go to the dance. And she just like has look on her face of like, because clearly dresses had been bought.
I would say she's got no time to fix
nothing.
This.
Oh no, totally. I mean that's what a shithead nerd I was.
Oh my God.
And so I'm like, and then I'm walking around all day, like I was looking really upset, like, oh man, oh my parents suck. My fucking aunt, blah blah blah. I can't believe this. You know, so that's the setup. So now I get to go to Alien. It's going to be like a sci-fi, you know, I don't know, like Close Encounters or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's at the time probably the most terrifying movie. I mean, I don't know. That movie started and I went numb, but with fear. And it just like, oh my God, this feeling of dread of like, fuck, I don't like scary stuff. And them going on that planet and everything, you know, this dripping shit and all that, and that spaceship with the dead, you know, pilot that looks like, you know, it's all Geiger kind of weird.
Yeah, yeah.
And my brain's just spinning out. And then here comes the egg and I'm like, fuck. And I mean, it didn't let up the entire time. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. I was literally in misery. It was so.
You earned that.
I earned it.
You earned that for Beth.
I know. And then when I got back to school on Monday, the guy that she fortunately was able to get to take her, they were like boyfriend and girlfriend and they were kissing in the hallway. I was like, oh, I could have had that. And I had this terrible night. So it was definitely a payback. So there is justice in this world.
But you were really Ridley Scott's target audience.
Oh yeah,
you were exactly the person he was hoping would be there opening night to see Alien.
Oh yeah, I was just absolutely traumatized. So so now when I watch horror, it's kind of like, oh, that's not so bad. But no, the one I really, and I, not to turn this to the horror podcast, but
listen,
not Inheritance. What's the one with Tony? Yes.
Hereditary,
that movie
yeah.
is fucking awesome.
Yes,
oh my God, I couldn't get over that movie, how good it was. And that there's, I like,
I have talked to the Foley artist who did the piano one.
Oh really? Effect. Oh my God.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's him and a whole chicken with the wires tucked underneath its wings and him just sawing furiously.
Oh my God, really? Oh.
And then the requisite set breaking celery for bones.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah. I love it in a movie when there's something where I'm just like, I'm saying, oh my God, for 5 minutes after it happens.
That is, I feel like that's kind of, that feels like something about what horror can still provide now.
Yeah, yeah.
As we are sort of saturated by spectacle and we have to sort of find our moments of awe within that might have come a bit easier before, I feel like horror is just still, unless you're just somebody who has become inured to it. Like, there's plenty of people in, like, the horror fandom who, like, it doesn't get to them anymore, but they're just so excited. It's like being on a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about, like, just, it's so fucked up that it can still get to you. It can still sort of rip you out of your seat in a way that's like, oh, yeah, like that person hanging out with that Transformer, that happens all the time. Like, oh, we're in Asgard kind of thing. But horror can still make your brain shut off and just oh my God, oh my God, and have to recalibrate your whole consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, and horror outside of superhero movies is what's saving movie theaters right now. It's great to elicit that kind of emotion out of an audience. I mean, as a filmmaker, that's all you kind of look for, whether it's doing it through comedy or doing it through twists or doing it through surprises. Like, that's the catnip, when you're just like, oh, if we can have people go like, oh my God, you know, then, you know, I've had that in a few of my movies. You're just like, you live for those moments, you know?
Well, I feel like it's very appropriate that somebody who, like, when you were watching Close Encounters, were you like, take me, aliens, take me, like, oh, I want to be picked by the aliens?
Oh yeah. Oh, my nightly routine was, for a year after that, was I would go up on the roof of my garage with a telescope and look for UFOs and wait to be taken away. I have two young adult sci-fi comedy books out called Ignatius McFarlane Frequenon, and it's all about a kid who sits on his roof every night waiting for UFOs to take him away, and then he eventually gets tired of that and builds his own rocket that blows up when he tries to do it, and it jumps him into a different frequency, basically. So he's in our, you know, in the same spot in our world. But the idea is basically, like, you know, the Earth is like a giant radio and you can switch between stations, but it's happening in the same spot. So where we are right now, there's an infinite number of things happening in the same spot on different frequencies. So that was my idea that I came up with. And then it's basically he goes to this other frequency and finds that a substitute teacher of his is there and has become sort of the king of it, because he's stolen everything from all the ideas from ours. So he's come up with, like, Star Wars and all of Shakespeare's plays, but he's selling them that is his own. So he's this, you know, thinks he's a genius. So anyway, so I don't know why I brought that up, other than it starts with a kid who sits on his roof with a telescope waiting for UFOs.
It feels like destiny that you would go on to be the man who brought the world Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah. 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 I mean, honestly, it was really just kind of my reaction to going, like, every young person I see on TV is like, yeah, nobody I ever knew in my life, you know, who are so cool about dating and sex and all this stuff. And it's like, where's my nerds, man?
I was going to ask about that. Like, when that was jumping off, like, when you were conceptualizing Freaks and Geeks, if it was because you felt like that was answering to, like, a niche that was starting to exist of people that you did see on TV and that you wanted to see more of, or if you were like, I feel like I don't see these people and I need to see these.
It was exactly that. I mean, it was, you know, yeah, Dawson's Creek and all those things. And, you know, and before that, just every teen thing, like even teen movies, even things like, you know, mm-hmm, Fast Times at Ridgemont High and all that stuff were really fun. But it's also like, it's everybody's having sex or talking about sex and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we were too terrified. Like, I couldn't even ask girls out, you know, and, you know, the thought of, like,
and even when you did, you'd go to Alien instead.
Yes, see, exactly. So that's what I get, you know. But to me, like, kissing, that would be like the most, oh my God, you're going to kiss somebody. So there's like, wait, how is everybody so cool they can actually take their clothes off in front of people and have sex? Like, how does that work? So yeah, for me, it was just kind of like, I'm tired of watching, because I also feel like, I don't know, I just felt like I never related that stuff when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I go, like, well, younger kids must, you know, they're not all cool. Like, there's gotta be some kids who are nerds like myself who are like, give me something that's about my life. So, you know, it was really just a total reaction to that. I mean, that's why the opening scene in Freaks and Geeks is starts out like an episode of Dawson's Creek. And then you go down under the bleachers and you actually find the real kids in the school.
Well, when were you a dapper? Were you a dapper high schooler, or did the dapper come later on?
No, I was dapper because it was disco era. You know, I was in high school from 76 to 80. So that was the height of disco.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I was always like in a jacket and, you know, but that was when you put your collar outside of your jacket, you know, and you have this faux silk shirts and these Angels Flight pants, which are these big bell bottoms, but with like cool platform shoes. So I really embraced that. I was dressed up, but then, you know, but then honestly, you know, when we did Freaks and Geeks, I just took my yearbooks into the costumers and said, here's how we all dressed. You know, I didn't want to look like that 70s show, because that's like a cartoon, you know. And you know, all the burnouts just kind of dressed in, you know, old army jackets and then jeans and that kind of thing. But then there was some of us who were kind of disco people around, and, you know, but
I love that you were a disco person.
I know. Oh my God, I was the king of the teen disco, I tell you.
That to me incepts like your love of musical numbers.
Yes.
In
yeah. Oh no, totally. No, although ironically, I didn't like Saturday Night Fever when I saw it, because it was, again, it was too weird for me. I like the dance numbers and all that stuff, but then I just thought it was gonna be like a fun disco movie, and then this is really tough working class story and him, you're pregnant, one of his friends commits suicide off a bridge. I'm like, wait, where's the disco dancing? What?
Where's the disco? Well, do you feel like, as you have, like, it's like to really break out with something like a Freaks and Geeks, and then We're Coming Around, obviously, with The School for Good and Evil, and then you really, like, there was the you kind of exploded an era of comedy with your female ensembles in the, like, early, mid-2010s. How do you feel like, are you still the outlier? Are you still the disco nerd in high school? Are you still sort of Roy Neary looking up to the sky being like, what are the aliens going to choose me? Or do you feel like you've found your spot in the terrestrial earth?
Well, I mean, I'm definitely happy. Let's just say that. I love making movies.
Good.
But I live in constant terror that I'm not going to be able to do it anymore. You know, if something doesn't work, you know, it's always like, when are they going to go, oh, he's lost touch, or he doesn't know anymore, or he doesn't have a commercial sensibility anymore, which is sort of that's the scariest thing. Because once you are accused of that, then people are very, reticent to give you money to do stuff. What I found in this business, it always kind of makes me laugh, is I think a lot of people in the industry are always waiting for you to pull one over on them. No matter how many kind of commercial hits you do and all that, and trying to service that, there's always a feeling somewhere in the development process, somewhere in the getting ready, of like, is he trying to make an art film now? one for him, guys, I don't want to make one for him. If my movies don't make money, nobody's more upset. I'm more upset about it than you are. And you lost money. So, but it's funny. So you really got to always be very diligent and just kind of always, thinking about what people are going to respond to. But that's why I make movies. I don't have any desire to make movies that nobody wants to see, or even that a small amount of people want to see. I'm a studio commercial filmmaker. There's plenty of really cool filmmakers who will look at me and think I'm a hack or whatever. But it's just like, I want to entertain the maximum amount of people. That's why I do so many test screenings, and if something doesn't work, even if I like it, I go, get it out of there, because like the audience didn't like it. And, or just didn't respond. You'll always leave in a few for yourself. There's a couple, a joke here or there. I'm like, I just know that's funny. It makes me laugh, and just leave it in, because as long as it doesn't make the audience go like, wait a minute, this guy doesn't know what he's doing, which is always the danger with comedy, what my editor from Bill Kerr from Bridesmaids, he would just call it the angry villagers syndrome, which is, you start a comedy, everybody's there, they paid their money, they're excited, nobody's coming in going like, I hope this sucks, and so there they are, and so here comes the first joke, and it's like, and they're like, oh, that kind of wasn't that funny, but all right, well, the next joke will be funny, and they're like, well, that wasn't very funny. And then you get a few more of those and people go like, what the fuck? And
we're losing the room.
Yeah. And then they light the torches and the villagers burn down the village, so that's why we're always just like, if that's not, it's got to be a triple or a home run, this joke. And if it's not, get it out, because it's better not to have a joke than have a joke that is lame.
Well, I wonder then, do you still, in the way that like you just mainlined these sci-fi movies at the theater growing up, do you still go to those movies? Is that like a comfort space? Like, is sci-fi sort of still like a home base for you? Or is it like, you obviously make a lot of comedy now. Like, is there a sort of home base you feel in cinema that you go to for that? Like, well, I'll miss prom for this.
Yeah, I think I'm just always looking for something that's going to surprise me. Truth be told, and this is no judgment on anything, I don't watch any of the new Star Wars stuff. I haven't, it's really good, but I haven't seen any of the TV shows. I didn't see like the last couple of movies. I saw, the first one with JJ did, but that was kind of it. Again, no reason other than I think I just kind of lost interest in it. And, and sometimes I just want what's new that's going to surprise me. That's why I get excited when like Jordan Peele has a new movie out, because I'm like, he's just so smart, and he comes up with these undeniable ideas that aren't expensive. But they're just like, like we were talking about earlier, they're just, you're surprised by them and you're compelled by them. And you go like, I gotta go see that, that's really cool. But, you know, and you always hate to be the jaded guy and go like, oh, seeing a movie is kind of a busman's holiday. But there is a little bit of that, because the more you know about it, you kind of watch movies in a way where you're kind of taking them apart. Unless a movie's great, then I'm just completely taken away by it. And I think it's why I've been having so much fun watching horror, you know, thanks to you, because it's out of my wheelhouse. And yet it's kind of go, and I just like, oh, I want to do that. I want to do that. That looks like fun, to be in control of it. I like being in control of scaring an audience. I don't like being scared in the audience.
Right,
but I can sit there and go like, oh, there's a jump scare coming up, or there's something that people are going to go like, oh my God. I just sit there like the cat that ate the canary, like waiting, like here it comes, you know. That's really fun. But when I'm sitting there like, oh shit, they're going to do a jump scare. And I'm like, fuck, like, am I going to have a heart attack when this happens? I'm very concerned with having a heart attack. I've always been afraid of that since I was a teenager for some reason. I always think like, someone's just going like, oh, and I'm going to, down I go, you know, but.
Just keel over, that's
exactly.
It.
Exactly, his heart exploded.
Well, then what, with the, you know, like the seasoned filmmaker who can watch any movie, and I would imagine their director producer brain turns on and kind of starts like working through the sausage making machine.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you, I mean, I don't know if you want to make a horror movie, but
I do.
You're enjoying watching them. Like, what is it that is inspiring you now to be like, I'm distant enough from this, or I have not yet taken on this challenge, to where I still feel the magical pull of this sort of unvarnished from my awareness of how to put all the pieces together?
Well, I think it's any genre I haven't done, you know, I mean, that's what I get excited about, you know, and horror, that's, you know, we're actually developing a horror movie in my company right now, because we found this book that we optioned that isn't out yet, but it's really fun. But anything I do, I have to make sure that I can make it funny, but not a spoof. I don't do spoofs, but I want to make, you know, horror and comedy are so intertwined, you know.
Absolutely.
And so, like,
it's a genre of timing.
That's exactly it. Totally. And you're getting a huge emotion out of people. Like, one of my favorite things I've ever done in a movie is in The Heat, the whole sequence with the knife in the leg.
Just take it. I'm sorry.
I'm pulling it out, and then I gotta put it back in.
What? Somebody's gonna come. I gotta put it back in. What? I gotta put it back in, and I'll put my hands behind my back, and then when he gets close to me, I can grab him. But you gotta shut up. I'm gonna put it back in.
Just put it away.
Oh my God! What are you doing?
Sorry, it doesn't go in that fucking easy. Just shut up. Shut up.
Like, audiences were just, they were screaming and laughing at the same time, because you're so horrified that she's gonna, and then she does it and it doesn't stick and she has to do it again. And I would just like sit there and like, I couldn't wait for that moment just to hear people have such a crazy big reaction that was like a horror comedy moment, you know. And so I'm like, oh, how do we get that feeling in there? But it's all gotta be character, you know. You have to build these things like dramas. And then you, with the comedy, you get the comedy where it can exist and not subvert the rest of the movie. And that's where I think a lot of movies fall apart when they try to stick in comedy, is it's like, oh, you know, like that's the wrong time to put in a joke. That's not a good time. You know, I have so many things I take out of movies because they go like, this just, people don't want a joke right here. You know, this is going to step on it. But, you know, you have to have some self-control in that way, because the studio's always like, you know, and people in charge are always like, no, put that joke back in. And you're like, I'm telling you, it's not a good, I know you think it's a laugh. It's not a good laugh. Right. This is that you will pay the price down the line for this laugh.
Nothing comes for free. Not even this.
No,
laugh.
Especially not laughs. But Dinah Do Musical, you know, a big sci-fi epic. I actually wrote a sci-fi epic that I've been desperately trying to get made, but everybody thinks it's cost too much. I write these scripts and everybody thinks they're too expensive, and I'm like, no, I want to do them. I want to do them good, but I don't want to do them for $200 million. I'm not crazy,
right. You're like, take your mind off of the sci-fi that you know is that expensive. I'm not trying to do that.
Right. I want to do something much more fun, you know, or monster, you know, my monster movie, you know, The Dark Army, you know, which I can't seem to get the studio to make because they're afraid that's expensive too. But then I saw the ad for the Marvel, you know, werewolves thing. And it's like, that's how I wanted it. I wanted to make like it look like an old movie. And so they did it and I didn't get to do it. So. But never say never, right?
I won't ever say never, because I'm still hoping for Spy 2. And so I am obviously invested in a Simple favor too. So the people who started the Simple podcast never say never.
Excellent. That's why
we are a believing demographic.
I love you guys. Yes, you're here.
Well, I have to wrap it up. Oh, I have to let you go. Oh. And I'm very bereft about that, because I just like sitting and talking to you.
Oh my God. That was so fun. So fun.
Yeah, you guys, if you want to hear Paul talk about disaster movies, you can look up Paul Feig's Disaster Girls podcast episodes. This is the back door into more Paul Feig content.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for taking the time to come on another podcast of mine and talk to me about movies. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Jordan. You're the greatest. I always love talking to you.
Well, I good luck out there with the release, and thank you again for joining
us. My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you to my friend Paul Feig, Disaster Girl VIP, friend of the show. The School for Good and Evil is streaming now on Netflix. And Paul also told us that he has a writing credit on a song from the soundtrack, Who Do You Think You Are?, from Kiana Ledé and Cassius Clay. So you can listen to that wherever you get your music. The man has the beat in his veins. He brings us music. He's a sneaky purveyor of musical film and television. So maybe check that out, a little Paul Feig songwriting credit. And now, the one quick thing before I go. It is Feeling Scene's first birthday. We did it. We made it a whole year. The first episode of this show aired on November 11th, 2021. And man, what a great year, you know? We were recently nominated for an award, the National Entertainment Journalists of the Year. We'll find out soon who those winners are. We started off this show interviewing Susan Orlean about seeing herself in Meryl Streep literally playing her in the movie adaptation. I mean, what a thing. And I just can't believe all the wonderful conversations I've gotten to have with people. I would recommend any episode at any time to anyone. As a former pod producer of mine likes to say, every episode is someone's first episode, and there's really no wrong way to start with the Feeling Scene pod. I think so excitedly back to the conversation that I had with Isabel Furman when she was going for the Independent Spirit Award for her film The Novice. Recently, a tender and soulful conversation with Ryan Kwanten, that despite if you know him best as Jason Stackhouse with his clothes off in True Blood, we peeled back some layers and we got to the heart of the man who's just really a proponent of independent cinema at heart. We've talked to Eureka, the drag queen. We have talked to Ki Hui Kwan at a time when I will say was the beginning of what should now be his march to a Best Supporting Actor nomination at the Oscars for Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's just been the most kind and thoughtful year of talking to people and finding the ways that they relate to these things we all love so much. The whole point of this thing in getting it started was the thing we share, no matter what character a person brought to conversation, the thing we would share would be audience, me, subject, interviewee, whatever. The thing we would all share is the experience of relating. And in many cases, the experience of not relating enough and having to find a way to graft ourselves onto fictional characters that are imperfect avatars, and then having a conversation about the power in that absence and the ways in which insufficient representation underserves the audience, it underserves the storytellers themselves. It is a beautiful time to be having these conversations when we have seen examples of more and better, but is also, I think, a vital time to be having these conversations where we can understand the limits of what we have been given, what we have seen in this sort of rise of diversity on screen, and see where we're still falling short. And hear about specific examples and ways and personality traits and cultures and types of life that we are still yet to see more perfectly rendered on screen. People have cried. People have laughed. I have had the most wonderful honor of getting to speak with people in moments of joy and moments of vulnerability about things that are important to them and a lot of times things that make them really happy. And that's exactly what I set out to do, and I'm really, really excited to keep doing it. I hope you stick around. If you're new here, I'm glad you found us. If you've been here since the beginning, you're the true ride or dies. Tell all your friends to come join, because I know we're having really nice conversations with creators and the people who comment on that creativity and the whole sort of ecosystem of stories coming to life. And I'm really honored by that. I'm so happy about it. I'm so happy about this year. And I just want to do more and better for you guys and for myself and for everyone. So thank you. Happy birthday, Feeling Seen. I know you're all celebrating if you're listening to this. That's it. That's this episode. That is the 1 year. And I wouldn't have rather spent it with anyone than the dear and treasured Paul Feig, the master of a simple favor himself. And that's our show. You can follow us on Twitter at FeelingScenePod, or you can send us an email at feelingscene@maximumfun.org. If you want to follow me, I'm Jorkru on Twitter. Our theme music is by Andrew Epen. The show is produced by Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producers are Kevin Ferguson and Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.